Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Thank you for joining us. As you know, we're on Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Please do remember to share this station with your friends and family. We are attempting to grow the station, so the only way that will happen is if you share the station with your friends and tell them they can't just turn on their radio. They do have to come to the internet and choose www.ucy.tv/AOF at 8 o'clock in the morning and they'll find us. Or they could go to YouTube on UCY TV and look for the Age of Vision radio show. Today we have a pre-recorded interview with Hervé Courtois of nuclearnews.net. And I'm giving you this advance warning that the audio is not the best. Turns out that for some reason, it's the only interview that this has happened to, but the file got corrupted for some way. For some reason, my voice was super slow, like on double slow speed, and every answer that Hervé gave us, there was a space in between, so it sounded all jumpity. So I went through I edited it for the last 5 days. I've been working on it. The reason I did that is because the information was so good. The interview was so fabulous. I didn't want to just give it up and say, well, let's just do it again. So I hope you will agree with me at the end of the 53 minutes. It is a 53-minute interview that it's worth listening to and you have gained some knowledge. I was fascinated to understand a little bit more about the French experience with nuclear power and some of the things that have happened in their country. One of the things that really has impressed me the most is that there are many, many activists around the world working to expose the lies and the deception and the disregard for human life, and as Hervé will say in this interview, ecocide, that they're perpetrating on our planet. So just know that it's not going to sound exactly right. It's the only interview I have pre-recorded that has had this happen. I did give some thought about ditching the whole thing and recording it again, but to be honest, I hope that you'll agree with me that this is an excellent interview from Hervé Courtois. And I do want to remind you again, please do share this radio station with your friends and family and encourage them to listen to us, because facing these facts about the nuclear industry genuinely is an act of love. In order for us to embrace the new world that we live in, the age of fission, the new age, that's what we are in, the age of fission, we must face the nuclear contamination protect our family and not look at it with dread, because we're in the pot, we're in the stew. There's not much we can do about it except learn to re-embrace our lives with joy and love. Do what you can do, and please take action, and we'll talk with you guys soon. I really genuinely appreciate you sharing our radio station and joining us every morning here on UCY.TV Radio. Take care. Enjoy the show. Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Thank you for joining us. Today is a pre-recorded interview that will be played on March 20th. We are interviewing Hervé Courtois again from nuclearnews.net. That's nuclear-news.net. Hervé, thank you for joining us once again. I'm glad to have you back.
Yes, thank you for having me again.
Yes. Well, we had originally hoped to have you on before the six-year, I don't know what we were going to call it, ignoring of the biggest disaster on the planet. But do you have any news of what's going on in Fukushima or near those nuclear power plants? Is there any news on any of that going over there?
Yeah, the biggest news at this time is that they are running the house support, you know, the house subsidies for the voluntary evacuees are being withdrawn by the government. So they are being forced to return to the evacuated zone. This is the news right now, you know. When it comes to the plant site itself, 1 year ago, the chief of decommissioning had said that they had not located the melted fuel. Well, 1 year later, it's still the same. They have not located with certainty the fuel. There were some cameras which were able to go deeper into the reactor 2 and took some footage of video. There might be some traces of melted fuel, but nothing really certainty. And the first problem they still have is to locate the melted fuel in the three reactors. The second problem, even if they would locate the melted fuel, how will they remove it? They can only remove it by remote control robots. The problem is these electronic semiconductors of the robots. They cannot take such high radiation. They get fried. So unless, first, even if they find the melted fuel, they don't have the technology yet to be able to remove it. And as long as the melted fuel will not be removed, the reactors will still be spitting radiation into our skies and into our environments.
I'm kind of confused because this is actually presents a question in my head. So they can't find the melted fuel, right?
They have not been able to find it.
Right, and I've been thinking all this time that, of course, it's not there. It blew up. It spewed out. It's in the ocean. It's blown up everywhere.
I don't. There is this theory that it was all vented out. I don't believe so, because I happened to talk about it with two different persons who are highly qualified. One is Professor Debord, who is a physicist and who is the president of the CRIRAD. The second one is Bruno Chareron. He is a nuclear engineer, and he is in charge of the laboratory of the CRIRAD. And I have been asking to both of them about this thing, if it would be possible that all the melted fuel would have been vented out. They doubted it. They told me some would have been vented out, but the highest percentage would have gone out of containment, out of confinement, downwards. Okay, so it must be somewhere down there, but they don't have the equipment equipment to reach there, to locate it. The robots cannot go that deep. They get fried. The last one they sent first measured 500, if I remember well, 530 millisievert. 530 sieverts, right? And the next one they sent, I think, a few days later, measured 650 wow. sieverts and died there, okay? So they cannot go that close, you know? They cannot go deeper with the technology that they have right now.
I'll be honest. This is my response to when I talk to nuclear scientists. I don't believe them. I think that they don't understand their own technology. I think they're just bluffers and liars.
No. This the CRIRAD is different. You see, the CRIRAD is a citizen monitoring network, okay, which was created by the French citizens after Chernobyl, okay, a few months after Chernobyl, because the French government lied to the French citizen that the radiation plume was not coming to France, that it would stop, it would not go that far from Ukraine and Belarus. And they lied.
Wow.
So this citizen organized themselves. It's a citizen association. They employ qualified people, but all of them are anti-nuclear.
Okay.
Professor Roland Desbordes and Bruno Chalaron are anti-nuclear people. I can rely in their opinion.
What is the name of that organization?
CRIRAD.
CRIRAD.
No, not CRIRAD. CRIRAD. I will send to you the contact.
Yeah, that'd be great. So we can put a link in. Because that'd be great. Because, you know, one of the things that I'm really, since I've been doing this radio show, actually, when I first became aware of Fukushima, I didn't think anybody was talking about it. But it's amazing how many citizens are out here doing something. Like I know here in Eugene, I connected with Eugene Peace Works. By the time this interview shows up, 311 will be passed, but we're going to do an action down in front of our library on 311, and we're just going to call it Fukushima on Fukushima Disaster Awareness. It's just to let people know it's still going on, because most people think it's no big deal anymore.
I always insist that it is still ongoing, you know. 6 years. We are only at the beginning of it, you know. It's going to be ongoing for a long time.
And it's going to get worse, actually. I don't think they'll be able to stop it.
It cannot be getting worse. I mean, from the time it melted down and it plumed, it was at its maximum, okay? But it will not get any better.
Well, what about this idea, Lydia Halevy reported on her show that they have built some buildings for the Olympics, the 2020 Olympics, out of reclaimed wood from Fukushima. Have you heard about that?
No, I haven't heard about that, but they are mixing debris, you know, they are recycling the debris into building materials, into construction materials for buildings and for roads. So that can be credible. It is very probable.
Now, are there any petitions or anything like that out there that people can sign maybe to help, or organizations that are helping people who are being forced to move back into the contaminated zone? Is there any nonprofits around that help people not move there?
I this afternoon while I was blogging, I encountered, there's a Japanese, he's a pediatrician, and he set up a 3 million yen fund to help those people to rent houses, apartments, so that they don't have to go back on location. You see, the problem, those evacuate zones, the threshold is 20 millisievert per year, okay? That is the the Japanese government is pushing the idea that 20 millisieverts per year is acceptable, whereas the international standard is 1 millisievert per year, right? And in the nuclear industry, the nuclear workers, that is their threshold, 20 millisievert per year, okay?
Wow.
So they are pushing back the evacuees into contaminated lands, territory, zones, at 20 millisievert threshold, telling them it's fine. And remember, this is not only adult, you have children, you know? I mean, it is sending children back to threshold level, which are for the nuclear industry workers in Europe or in America. It's
men, it's adults, grown adults.
Yes, grown adults. And you know that children are much more sensitive to radiation. It's really madness. It's criminal.
It is criminal. Actually, the sad part is, come 3 to 5 years later, you know, they're gonna have children getting very, very sick because of those levels. They think that they can just pretend it's not that bad, but the children are going to get sick. Although, look what's happened to the children of St. Louis. The children of St. Louis and the people of St. Louis, Missouri, the ones that are living near Bridgeton and the Westlake landfill, I mean, their houses are like one person's house is 300 counts per minute. It's just off the charts high. Kids are dying, and our country has not even taken us second look. The governor there doesn't even consider it an emergency. Children are dropping off like flies. I mean, the nuclear industry has got to be the most callous industry I've ever seen in my life. They have no regard for life at all.
Yeah.
Well, what about this idea, by the time that this airs, which will be the 20th, today is actually the 8th, I wanted to ask you about this iodine-131, this story about Norway. I had heard some people say that that nuclear facility in Norway that's having trouble. Isn't that in that? Somebody commented, I saw a couple comments on Sean's channel, you know, that he was just lying and exaggerating, that we're just trying to scare people. Is there any updates on what's going on in Norway? Or maybe you can explain to our listeners what did happen in Norway.
Well, you see, in Europe, we have what we call ERDEP. It's E-U-R-D-E-P. It's a European Community Finance Data Network, Data Platform, okay, Radiological Monitoring Data Platform, where all these different radiation monitoring from each European country, they put up their data together, okay. And citizens can go on that platform to look at the data. The problem, 1 week, 1 day earlier, 1 month earlier, it's all the graph, all the data are there. Now, still, that platform can hide when there is some events. The IAEA take over and order to the ERDEP to not publish the data, okay? But then you have space.
Do they have authority over that?
Yes, they have authority over the ERDEP.
Wow.
Because it's international, okay? IAEA is international. It take over. When they do so, there is space in the graph, okay? You understand what I'm trying to explain? If you have a graph, you have a continuous line of spike, okay? Small spike, big spike, whatever. It's a continuous line. But whenever there is an incident, the IAEA ordered the ERDEP to cut that part out. So then you have a segment which is missing.
I think that's standard. They do that here. It does that here too.
Okay. So Sean went to the ERDEP data records and he looked as far as October 2016. That research reactor in Norway has had problems all the way nonstop since October last year, you know. they had a partial meltdown. They lost control on some of the assembly line there. So
that was in October.
Yeah, that was in October. But after that, there has not been any really update that they recover control. Mm. Okay. So the mystery is there, you know. It could be that reactor, which is still emitting.
So in other words, the facility didn't declare itself to be in crisis.
They surmised it from the data. They did not even declare it to the local nuclear regulation authority in Norway, you know. So anyway. Sean has been going all over the records of different countries, and he encountered that unfilled reactor in Norway. Then he contacted the people of Bellona Association. It's an environmental association in Norway, and they had a chat together. And then he wrote that article. Okay. Now, I would not call it a full meltdown, but there is definitely a partial meltdown ongoing there, you know. And we don't know if it has been settled or not, okay.
You know what it makes me wonder? How many other facilities...
But the difficulty is this, it's not only one, you know, a reactor in Europe, which is releasing some stuff, you know.
Yeah.
There are many, and most of them don't declare it. Some of them declare it, and it's covered up by the IAEA, and some of them don't even declare it to the IAEA, okay? So it's very scary. It's very scary. That is also why independent citizen radiation monitoring network is important.
Okay. Wow.
Because when it's ongoing, nobody is going to tell you to watch out. There is some emission. Protect yourself and be careful of what you eat. Nobody is going to tell you, you know. Oh. Don't expect the government and to inform you about it. Okay.
Right. Well, look what happened in Japan. The people weren't told for weeks, and it was really bad. They were not...
Same in France at the time of Chernobyl, you know. The biggest joke in France is the government told us that the Chernobyl cloud, radioactive cloud, would not reach France. Okay, that it would stop on the way before France. Mm. So the biggest joke in France is our borders are so tight, you know, the radioactive. They cannot stop the German army during Second World War, but they stop radioactive clouds from Chernobyl.
Well, that speaks to, you know, tomorrow by the time people hear this, they'll have heard our interview with Tony West. He did a documentary in St. Louis, and the St. Louis documentary is called The Safe Side of the Fence. And he did it because he's a broadcaster and a filmmaker, and he... You'll hear his story, but the documentary opens with this family sitting at a picnic fence next to this landfill that's having trouble that the government's managing, that buried nuclear waste. Nobody knew it at the time. This is how they found out. And over across the fence, the chain link fence, they're having picnics with their kids at a park, and they're having fun. They look over, and there's a guy in a full hazmat suit working on this mound. this government mound, and they called up the facility and said, what's going on here? Like, they said to him, don't worry, you're on the safe side of the...
Yeah, that's typical. You know, in France, our country is very nuclearized. We have nuclear waste scattered all over the country. You know, they've been dumping it just every goddamn where. Recently in West France, they detected plutonium, you know, near La Hague, you know.
Wow.
The independent, in France, there's two independent radiation monitoring association. One is in South France, it's the CRIRAD. The other one is in North West France, it's called the ACRO. And the ACRO detected plutonium. And they investigated, they reported it to the authorities, they filed a complaint, and then finally Areva acknowledged, you know, that there is some, there has been some plutonium released. You know.
Wow. Well, I had heard that France actually built pipes underground as putting their waste out in the Irish. Is that correct?
No. You got two stories mixed up, okay?
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay. One is La Hague, just the one I was mentioning you now, okay? The Areva company, the French nuclear industry, for many years, they were bullshitting that they were recycling nuclear waste. Okay. Actually, they were not recycling it. They had a secret contract with Soviet Union. Okay. And they were shipping it to Soviet Union, and the Soviet, they were dumping it in Siberia or in Central Asia, okay? But that that contract between Soviet Union and Areva ran out in 2007, okay? So since 2007, they have nowhere to dump it or ship it or whatever. But in La Hague, they are still conditioning all the nuclear waste. They are not recycling it, they are conditioning. And a lot of waste, liquid waste, radioactive liquid waste, they have a long pipe coming out from the land into the sea, okay? That sea is the British Channel. It's located between the British Channel, you know, and the Atlantic, okay? And that long pipe is going under the water, releasing that liquid waste into the sea, okay? That is the French side.
How is that legal?
In England, you have the Sellafield nuclear plant, which is one of the most highly contaminated places. They have a lot of nuclear waste there.
Wow.
You know, Sellafield is maybe the equivalent to Hanford in the U.S. Okay. Now, Sellafield is on the west coast of England, bordering the Irish Sea and facing the Ireland eastern coast, okay? So from Sellafield over there, you also have a pipe going from the land under the sea, under water, and dumping, releasing radioactive liquid waste into the Irish Sea.
How is that legal? How did they do that?
There is no actual, how do you call that, legislation to rule such dumping at sea. Okay.
They still have not ruled it illegal? They continue to do this?
No, they still continue to do it.
Oh my gosh! I thought that had been put to an end, but that's still ongoing.
That's why I find funny, you know. Sometimes I find it funny because some of the Americans are scared
freaking out
about Fukushima dumping radioactive waste, liquid contaminated water, into the Pacific, okay, which will be coming to the U.S. West Coast. But believe me, there has been a lot of dumping of radioactive waste into the sea, into the Atlantic, and into the British Channel by the French and the English and the British, okay? And nowadays, through those pipes. And that is continuous, you know, every day.
How long has that been going on, Hervé?
8 years, God knows.
So this is why they're ignoring Fukushima. It's like, yeah, whatever, business as usual, who cares?
Yeah, because they do it themselves.
It's so outrageous. It's so, like, people, you know what Fukushima has actually done? It's the highlights. It's turned on the spotlights to the crimes of the nuclear industry.
Exactly. Actually, what we freak out about Fukushima and accuse TEPCO of, we have it here at home, okay? You have it there in the U.S., you know, and you have it here too, you know. It's the nuclear industry, their crime are the same all over the world, okay? That's another story. You see, people are worrying about eating the fish and the seafood coming from the Pacific Ocean, right? But they should also worry about the fish and the seafood coming from the Atlantic. And from
I don't think you should eat any fish. Exactly. If you're asking me, I say nothing coming out of the ocean, frankly.
Exactly. Because what they are dumping, what La Hague is dumping into the British Channel, depending on the current, is going all the way up to the North Sea. And from the North Sea into the Atlantic, or depending on the current, instead going upward to England coast, following England coast northbound, it's going southbound, westbound to the Atlantic Sea. The same thing, what they are dumping, what Sellafield is dumping into the Irish Sea. Some of it is going into the Atlantic. It doesn't stay there, okay? So even the Atlantic is being contaminated by the radioactive waste that Sellafield and La Hague are dumping.
This is so unconscionable. Just off the top of my head, we know for sure Fukushima is pouring 100,000 tons of radioactive waste into the Pacific. Sellafield is pouring millions of gallons. We have liters. Millions. I heard they're pouring 9 million liters. Diablo Canyon, did you know Diablo Canyon in California dumps their waste? So it is kind of a standard. I mean, how is it that we allow this industry to just literally destroy our water? It is destroying our water. Even, talk about water protectors.
Even in Canada, they were dumping radioactive waste dumps into lakes. Okay.
Why would they do that to their own country? This is what's beyond. This is what I can't. Why are we doing it to you? It's like shitting in your own backyard. You know what I mean?
Greed.
Like for real?
Greed.
Money. That's it. Because the people who are making the money don't give a darn about ounce of human life or animal life or earth life or anything. They just want their money, their way of life. They're them.
The other thing I wanted to point you out is if you take Fukushima by example, okay, everybody, you know, be it the media, be it the bloggers, the blogs, you know, whoever, you know, all of us, we are depending on the numbers that TEPCO is giving us, okay? Nobody has any means. There is no third partial party.
I get you. I know. This is...
Party to verify those numbers and the data of location. TEPCO and the IAEA, but TEPCO first as hold the control on the data there, you know.
Exactly.
Any, be it the mainstream media or the independent bloggers, you know, we are all depending on numbers which are given to us by TEPCO. Okay?
Yeah.
And nobody knows how much those numbers are true or not. TEPCO is famous. They have always been lying and covering and twisting the facts.
John Gottman said it directly. When he looked at the results of the Japanese, he said the one thing he noticed was that the government, the military, the entire nuclear industry, they underreport the negative effects of radioactive emission by 90% and immediately deny radiation causes harm unless they absolutely have to, and then they only report a very small portion of it if they have to. So imagine what it really is if it's 90%. I mean, it is even at every one of these facilities, Diablo Canyon, Sellafield.
I will tell you a funny story which happened in
Hanford
in June 2011. In June 2011, as usual, TEPCO was still lying, you know, giving bullshit numbers, even to the Japanese government. And there was this professor of biology, I think, called Professor Kodama of the Tokyo University, the best university of Japan, and by the way, also called Todai. And anyway, he and his crew, they went to test the water in Tokyo Bay. And then from the result of he found in Tokyo Bay, he proved that the numbers that TEPCO was giving, was providing, was huge bullshit, okay? And he went into the Japanese Diet, like the Congress in Japan, in Tokyo, and he sermon, he gave a speech to all those congressmen, you know, telling them, look, TEPCO is lying, you know, he's not telling us the truth. And he proved them, you know. He brought the proofs.
He spoke directly to the Diet?
To the Diet, you know. And really with anger. You can find that video. It's in two parts. It's on YouTube. His name is Professor Kodama.
Okay.
And imagine, you know, he told them the numbers that TEPCO is giving is rubbish. It's just impossible. The contamination I found here in Tokyo Bay water, okay, seawater, is much higher than whatever they were saying, you know. It's very, very interesting. What is very interesting is that man was very, very courageous because he faced the entire Japanese government in June 2011. And I think he must have thrown his career. Since then, he has completely disappeared from the scene.
What do you mean? He does not speak out? Well, you know why? The secrecy laws. He can't.
Yeah. He's been
They have secrecy laws. If he'll lose his job, he loses everything if he speaks out at all.
After he did this, he must have been threatened, pressured, you know.
I wonder if he's considered one of those professionals that can go to jail for speaking out, like journalists can't speak out and they can go to jail.
The law on secrecy is from November 2013.
Do you know this law? Are you familiar with it?
Yeah.
Can you explain how it functions? And you know, this is
not really. Because I will explain to you that law, the terms of that law are very vague. Okay? So it does not define in details what is the crime in itself. You know, like you are breaking secrecy about what matter. You know, it doesn't define it. So it's all at the government discretion.
Oh, so if they don't want to talk about it, if they give you a warning and come back with a warning, shut up, and then you continue to do it.
But you know, that secrecy law is addressed to everybody, journalists, citizens, scientists, anything. But there is also another one. There's also another law in Japan which they passed, which is addressed to the doctors, to the physicians, right? They can, example, the cancers, okay? The cancer, any cancer goes on a national registry, and the physician, the doctors cannot transmit information to anybody about it. They risk themselves huge fine and 3 years in jail, okay?
So they can't give information even to the families?
No.
So the family can't?
The government is has entire control on the cancer registry, you know?
Wow.
Nobody can reach it. You can get into it, you know? He must get special.
Well, I wonder if people there have done, do you know if there's any organizations like they've done in St. Louis? Like, the reason that our government took St. Louis seriously and even looked at the associated risk with the secretly buried uranium that they did at Bridgeton. I mean, this is serious stuff, 200,000 tons of secretly buried uranium. All these people, they created their own scientific plot charts. They did their own control study group. They were a group of professionals who had connected on Facebook and discovered they had the same common diseases, and it was just too odd, so they looked into it.
Yeah.
Is there anybody like that in Japan?
I haven't heard anything like that.
I wonder if that would be considered illegal.
Maybe.
In other words, the government could deem that to be illegal if they created like an online Facebook or something like that. That's where they met on Facebook.
Well, in Japan, they have now citizen radiation monitoring networks has been developed, okay? The one who started to develop that was Wataru Iwata, and it's extended well over eastern Japan. It's present in 47 prefectures all over Japan.
Wow.
They measure the environment, and they also measure food.
Is that the government? These are citizens?
No, citizens.
That's actually great. That's what I want to do. I want to get together some machines to study food. I want us to know what it is. That's the expensive. That's the hard part. Those machines are expensive.
Yeah, they are expensive.
So, but no scientists. So this guy basically came out, spoke to the diet, and then shut up after that.
Yes.
So I will. No more action.
I will also send you, I will find the link, and I will send you. It has been translated into English.
Please, it's really sad about him. That must weigh heavy on his heart.
Yep.
Because really, he should have like moved out of the country. He should have figured out a way to move out of the country. But then it goes down the whole family chain. That's the thing. This is the sickening part of it. Like, you're living in France where, do people just consider it normal to be getting cancer and you're going to die early and you're going to have mutated kids and you're going to have all kinds of weird stuff happening to you? Like, your kids are going to have rare diseases or autism?
Well, you know, they keep the people ignorant, you know? Like, example, I'm living in north of Paris, in North France, okay? One of the popular dish for the North French people, it's mussels, you know, mussels? With French fries, okay? It's a very traditional Northern French dish, mussels with French fries. Now, very few of them, when they eat their mussels and French fries, very few of them are aware that those mussels are being fished, have been gathered, collected along the Normandy coast, right there, the British Channel, right there where La Hague is dumping liquid radioactive waste.
Okay. What's their cancer rates, their oncology rates, their child?
We have the highest cancer rate of Europe.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's directly related. All you have to do is put the cancer maps on top of where nuclear facilities are. Yep. Nuclear equals cancer.
Yep, of course. There's one more thing I want. I will tell you something.
Okay.
Something
which we have about 15 minutes left just to give you a little bit of time.
I'll tell you another thing, but where people, many in 2011 and 2012, I had been talking with Star Priscilla of Coalition Against Nuke, you know, the group,
uh-huh.
Coalition Against Nuke. I'd been talking with her, like in France, one way to affect the nuclear industry and to open the eyes of the public, it would be to boycott the exports of French wines, okay? You see, the Americans are buying a lot of French wines, okay?
I know.
And you have to think that in France, there is three regions in France which are producing wine. Okay. One is the Bordeaux region, Bordeaux wine, okay. And the other one is the Rhone Valley wine, okay, close to the Alps in the eastern, southeastern France. Now, both regions have many nuclear plants.
I know. I could not believe it when I looked, actually, after our last interview to see where are all the nuclear plants.
I'm quite sure that if you would analyze those wine, you would find traces of radionuclide.
I'm certain of it.
I'm certain too. Okay.
I mean, you guys got blasted by Chernobyl, and you have nuclear waste all around you.
Yeah, I'm lucky. The place I live, something like 150 kilometers north of Paris. Okay, I live in the center of North France.
Mm.
So in the north of me, I have two reactors on the close to the Belgian border. Those are modern reactors.
How far away are they from you?
150 kilometers.
Okay.
Those are powerful one, 1,850 megawatt. And then you have some on the eastern side, on the German border, the old one, Fessenheim, Kattenholm, and etc. That's 250 kilometers eastern from me. And then on the west side, I have many. I have Gravelines, which has six reactors side by side near the sea, same as the Fukushima one, the General Electric one, you know, GDRMW, right? And then I have others all along the coast, the northwest coast. And then there is one close to Paris, Nogent reactor.
How close is it to Paris?
The one Nogent is something like 70 kilometers close to Paris.
Do you know Indian Point is like 30 from New York? Like, that is just a complete disaster.
Yeah, Indian Point. It's very revealing, you know. It's madness, you know. It's just madness, you know. Insanity.
Well, I think the only way we're going to have to, I mean, we have to live with it. Someone's going to come out of this. I mean, I think we're coming to the point where it can't keep on like this. There is something is going to happen. We're already having catastrophic events, ignored catastrophic events. Sellafield, Fukushima, Hanford, Diablo Canyon. I mean, it's an outrage that these events are just out of control, and instead of using their scientists to figure it out, they're spending all this time and energy creating more waste and lying about it.
It's going to get worse. It's going to get worse because a lot of these nuclear plants are aging.
Yeah.
So the risk of
Their thought is, well then let's create, well then let's, and let's keep these old ones going, like let's figure out a way to keep the old ones going.
Yeah.
But it's 19th century technology in a 21st century time. That's the issue. They need to think outside the box. They need to put some real money in this and get smart and stop acting up and stop being greedy. You know, we need to put some money into it and say, save our planet. That's all. I mean, I believe there's solutions and answers. Most likely, they already know them. They're just, as you said earlier, being greedy. Pure, pure, pure greed. Wow. It's interesting to be part of this generation, Hervé. Yeah. Here you are. You're in Paris, and I'm in Eugene, Oregon.
Nowadays, they're not going to make money with nuclear plant anymore. To build them is very expensive. Due to security measures, the price to build them is enormous. Okay, they won't earn money anymore with nuclear plants. Those days are over. You know, everywhere nuclear will decline. The only future for the nuclear industry to make money is in this decommissioning and dismantling nuclear plants. That's where they're gonna earn money.
Decommissioning?
Yeah, dismantling it. Disassembling the plant, okay?
Well, the thing is, we need them to take care of it forever. I mean, we need them to figure it out. We need them to take care of it and make a business. I mean, we need to figure out a way to pay them so they'll want to do it, because it's got to be done. They have to figure out what to do with this stuff. It's outrageous.
The problem is the corporate responsibility, because look what happened in San Onofre. Okay, they shut it down and they throw the cost to the public.
Yeah. Well, we need to put microbes everywhere. I think microbes, from everything I've read, like microbes are a huge, huge, gigantic part of the resolution of all this stuff. That's why phytoremediation, planting plants that pick up this stuff and at least absorb it from the ground, and then we can figure out what to do with that. There's ways to put that into something, turn it into a compost, and use the energy again. You know what I mean? There's ways to do that.
Yep.
So it's such a trip that they just don't do this. Well, so tell us again, Ray, about your website and how people can reach you if they want to talk to you.
Well,
go ahead.
They can reach me on two blogs. First, nuclear-net.com. Nuclear News. That's nuclear-news.com. Okay. And the other one is my personal blog, Dan Renard. D-U-N-R-E-N-A-R-D. Also called Fukushima 311 Watchdog.
Okay. Well, look, I want to talk to you. We have about 5 minutes in. And if you don't want to discuss this here on this venue, but I would like to talk about this idea about when you said earlier, we all have to rely on what TEPCO tells us, and we know there's lying. And this is the thing. There's a lot of people that are very angry about these liars. And this is why, like, I'm sort of in the target of the circular firing squad right now, because I honor Dr. Caldicott and Dr. Busby and Arne Gunderson. And you know what I mean? I think their work is good and valiant. I don't think they're liars. I don't think they're shills for the nuclear industry.
No, I don't think.
I think that the people that are saying those things, I understand their anger. And I think it's untenable that we continue like this, because it's only going to help the nuclear industry. Calling them names, they are the nuclear experts who testify in court cases where actually people win. They're not like losing cases on purpose, and they're not getting greedy and making millions off the backs of all of us soft environmentalists. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
It harms the anti-nuke movement for us to bite each other's backs.
Yeah.
And this is why, like, in this venue, I still interview activists that want to come on the show and act civil. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not into name-calling. I don't think I ask people back who do call me names, although I have stretched out my hand to, like, mend fences and nobody's called me back. But I think it's really important that we remember what the target is. The target is the nuclear industry that is murdering our children.
There is an interesting development I would like to talk. There is a move, movement in Europe, it's in England and in France, it's called End Ecocide, okay? It's a bunch of people and some lawyers, professional lawyers, they want a law, an international law of ecocide, so that all those corporations will have an environmental responsibility in whatever pollution or destruction.
So we can force the nuclear industry to stop dumping their shit into the the oceans.
We need an international law of ecocide, okay?
Yes, we do. Well, we need a movement to end ecocide. We need a movement for people to recognize that. Just look at the all of the daily, there's a website, Mass Animal Deaths, look them up. There's tons of stories, hundreds of thousands of birds and animals and fish and tons and tons. And I mean, over 1 million birds, 2 million birds being lost in a month, you know, dying mass animal deaths. We're falling off, we're dropping off like flies, they say, folks.
So, we'll be next one if we don't stop it.
Well, I think we are the next one, because what are these people doing to our kids? We know that nuclear causes sterility. Let us be clear, it causes sterility.
Yeah. So, I know that well. You know, my daughter in Fukushima, she doesn't want to have children because she has been exposed for those years. So
that's
she doesn't.
Leaving a lady decided when she went through Three Mile Island.
Exactly. So she doesn't want to take the chance to have a child and that child to be tetragenic.
Wow.
And it's very sad, you know, it's very sad.
Yeah.
Because every woman wish to have some children, you know.
Yeah.
It's one of the happiness of life.
And what about your daughter? Is she healthy and safe?
For the time being,
yeah. So
she does her best.
How is she older than 30?
Yeah, she's 32.
Oh, so she was still in her late 20s when Fukushima happened, though.
Yeah.
Wow.
She did not marry, and she doesn't want to have child.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what about the do they know people there that are affected by the radioactive, have been, you know, have issues? Are people beginning to show symptoms?
They know, but they don't talk about it. In the society there, it became taboo to talk about it.
That's what they did after World War II, the same thing. Wow. So, and it's still, well, now it's against the law. I guess you can't talk about it, can you? Not really. That's the abominable thing, but I'm going to actually get in touch with that and Ecocide. That's actually really great.
I will find the links for you and I will send to you.
Okay, that would be really good.
Okay.
Well, thank you. We have about a minute left. You've been listening to Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. I've been speaking with Hervé Courtois of nuclearnews.net. That's nuclear-news.net. And I really appreciate you being on here.
Yeah, I appreciate too. I just apologize for my French accent.
Your English will get better the more English you speak.
I'm not English native, so please bear with me.
That's all right. You know, you'll get used to my California accent, so we'll be even, huh? Because, you know, in California we have our own, that's the odd thing.
I'd rather have a Californian accent in front of me than an Aussie accent.
I don't know if it's a mousy accent, but I appreciate you being here, and I'm glad that you're doing the work that you do. And I just want to, you know, we're citizen activists, and I again want to go back to this. I really denounce all of us attacking each other. Because we must keep our heads and keep our cool, shake it off. That's what I'm doing. When I have been the victim of, I thought about quitting my activism because of it. Seriously, I just, even the radio show, I thought, why am I doing this? But you know why? I have three beautiful grandchildren that are my own daughters. You know, they deserve a life.
For your children, for your grandchildren, and for the planet.
And we all need to become water protectors, and in that means ending nuclear. Being a water protector has to include being an anti-nuclear activist, because these people are killing us.
Yes.
Anyways, thank you for joining us. Put your courage feet on. Lean into democracy. Make it work. Take some action. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye-bye.